facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, it's Wednesday. It is hump day. We're trying to get through the week on the Cale Clark Show. We're going to be talking about work and rest today a little bit. Give us a call, 1-888-914-9149, 1-888-914-9149. You can also tweet at me. You can follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, at Cale Clark Show is our show account. And the email address is kale@relevantradio.com. Well, yesterday we were talking about reading, and it was such a fun show. We had an amazing show talking about reading, and it's really important for us as people of the word to be able to read and read well, read widely. It'll help us in so many ways in our lives. And we had so many great phone calls coming in. I apologize to those who weren't able to get through yesterday because the lines were jammed pretty much for the entire hour. And one of the things that we need, obviously, in order to read well and read widely is rest, time to do it. And so that's sort of the part two of this whole equation, which I wanted to talk about today, because this culture of being always on is so prevalent in our society, isn't it? And that's really not a good thing. It's not a healthy thing. It's not how we were set up to live by God himself. And even in the secular world, people are realizing this. I saw an interesting interview that was done in The Guardian UK with an author named Alex Soojung Kim Pang, and he has written a book. And speaking of books that I want to read, I wanted to talk about some books I'm reading and books I want to read. This is one of the ones I want to read. It's called Rest. Rest. Why You Get More Done When You Work Less. Now, that sounds pretty appealing to me because one of the things I'm trying to do is cut down a little bit. I'm working a lot, and I'm trying to make sure that my life is balanced. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes I freely confess to you that I need to pull back in certain areas to live a more balanced life. And this is an interesting paradox that if you work less, you'll actually be more productive if you do it right. And this is really interesting to me. So I wanted to read about this. And so Alex Soojung Kim Pang was a consultant in Silicon Valley for about 15 years. And he was just totally bought into this work at all times mentality, this, as Cal Newport puts it, the hyperactive hive mind mentality where you're just going all the time, 24/7. And one of the things that this author says in the interview is that after 15 years of doing this, lots of projects, multitasking all the time, lots of traveling, he started to feel the classic effects of burnout. And so how did he respond to this? By trying to work even more, you know, pouring gasoline on the fire, if you will. He tried to fit even more into his day and try to work even harder. But then he took a sabbatical. He took a sabbatical at Microsoft Research in Cambridge. I don't know whether that's Cambridge, Massachusetts, or Cambridge in England, but at any rate, he found that this is where the paradox started to come into play for him. In 3 months on sabbatical, he said he got an enormous amount of work done and did an awful lot of really serious thinking, which was a great luxury to him, the ability to just take time to think. But he also felt like he was getting so much done and thinking through some really complex problems. But at the same time, he felt like he had some leisure on his hands. He didn't feel, as he writes, the constant pressure to look busy or the stress that he had when he was consulting. That kind of makes me think of George Costanza on Seinfeld, that he always said, you know, make sure there's always a lot of papers on your desk so that the boss thinks that you're really, really busy. Always, always have papers, have a file in your hand when you're walking around the office. All the tricks of Costanza to make it look like he was working hard. At any rate, so this author, Alex Soojung Kim Pang, started to realize that, you know what, maybe this idea that we have between the correlation between working hours and productivity, maybe we've got it backwards. Maybe we should actually make more time in our lives for leisure in the classic Greek sense of the word leisure, not, and he emphasizes not playing a lot of video games. So when we're talking about leisure time, when we're talking about time for rest, we're not talking about goofing off. We're not talking about doing nothing. We're not talking about vegging or chilling alone. It's much more than that. It's actually something that's kind of an active rest. And we're going to get into that in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If this is resonating at all with you, give us a call. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. If you've had a problem with workaholism, if you feel like it's been tough for you to pull back because of the demands that have been placed on you to live a balanced life, work, worship, and rest, I want to hear about this. 1-888-914-9149. But be forewarned that Patrick Alog is here today, and one of the things that I didn't get to mention yesterday, just because we ran out of time, and he actually had to go too, Patrick had to go, he tells me that the book that he's reading right now is Dracula. So if he answers the phone, if you call that number, 888-914-9149, and he answers the phone by saying, "Hello, you reach Rather Than Radio," don't hang up. He's just really into this book right now. But what's actually kind of funny about Dracula is that Dracula is kind of the reverse of Christ. I think it was Peter Kreeft who said this. And Peter Kreeft, by the way, just another sidebar here, a sidebar onto a sidebar. He's going to be on the program on Monday. You're not going to want to miss this. The famed Catholic professor, convert, and author Peter Kreeft has written a book about the decline of Western civilization. And you're not going to want to miss this interview that I'm going to have with him coming up this Monday. So mark your calendars for that. But I think it was Peter Kreeft who said that Dracula is the reverse of Jesus, because what does Dracula want to do? I want to suck your blood. I want to drink your blood. But Jesus wants to give us his blood. Dracula goes into his tomb at night, back into his casket. Jesus comes out of the grave with the resurrection. There's so many things that we could say. But maybe I'll ask Peter Kreeft about that on Monday. I'll save it for then. But back to this concept of work and rest and the need to be more balanced in this way. In this interview, the author of the book Rest, and again, his name is Alex Soo-Jung Kim Pang, he thought that the more he worked, he really did think, until he wrote this book on rest, he actually thought that the more he worked, the more productive he was going to be. And that's why when he felt burned out, he just piled on and kept working harder and harder. And he thought that it was kind of like a straight line on a graph, just going up and up and up and up. The more hours you put in, the more you're going to get done. But he said that's a serious mistake. It's a serious mistake because there's now more than a century's worth of research showing that overwork in the long run is bad for people, and it's also bad for business too. It's bad for productivity. It's bad for organizations because you can't sustain it forever. You can sustain it for maybe short bursts of intense activity, but after that, you start creating more problems than you actually solve. So that was really interesting to me. And by the way, we're gonna talk about a Catholic angle on this in a minute, but I just wanted to focus on how even in the secular world, people are realizing this. And this is true for any kind of job, by the way. It's true for almost any job. Now, this guy obviously is a writer, Alex Soo-Jung Kim Pang. He's a writer. He's written this book, Rest. So one might call him a creative person. And he was asked the question in this interview with The Guardian UK. Andrew Anthony was the guy who wrote the article interviewing him. And he said, if you're not a creative person, if you're not in a quote-unquote creative line of work, do these truths still apply? And he says, yeah, absolutely. Because unless you're doing a job that is simply just following a set of instructions that have been written out for you, I don't know, maybe you're working on an assembly line at a widget factory, and there's nothing wrong with that. Widgets are great. We all need widgets, right? That's a classic example of business textbooks about the widget factory. Anyways, unless your job is laid out for you point by point by point, and it's just a mechanistic type thing, it's very rare, actually, that any job would be that mechanistic, because almost every job has problems, has exceptions. You're going to have to use some ingenuity, some thinking here to get around problems. But really, no matter what kind of work you do, and any job, any honest job, any honest work can be sanctified, can be a path to God. That's important to know as well. The job that's the most important job is the one that the worker glorifies God the most in that job. So it really doesn't matter what our profession is. It's what we do with it. But the research is clear that no matter what you do, overwork is going to impact your productivity for the worse. And it's not just creative people. As Alex Pang says, it's not just creative people who are affected by these things. It's simply human beings in general that are affected by this problem. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. And when you're, now that we're in this digital age, that just compounds the problem because we're so connected to work at all times because of our smartphones, because of instant messaging, because of email, because of texting, because of apps like Slack, where teams can work on things 24/7. And so we're sometimes not so critical. This is one thing he said in the interview. We're not so critical of new technologies, particularly communication technologies, than perhaps we should be. Email. Cal Newport just came out with a book called A World Without Email. That sounds like paradise to a lot of people that can't get away from their email. Email, smartphones, these technologies, which seem to hold out the promise of saving time, making life more convenient, making things easier. They do make some things easier for sure, but they haven't, and this is admittedly a bit of conjecture, but it doesn't seem like they've given us a lot more time with our families or even made us more productive. In actuality, they've just spread out work, as he puts it, like a fine powder that spreads right throughout our day. Just kind of grinds it down to this level where it just can be sprinkled everywhere. And I saw another study that says that the average worker, because of their phones, because they're always connected, they spend up to 13.5 hours dealing with work at some level during the day, whether it's email, the messaging tools that I mentioned earlier. That is very close to being always on for all your working hours. Is there any way to dial this back? Is there any way to do this? Well, the answer is some companies are actually recognizing actively the problem, and they're doing that. And a lot of new technology companies coming out of Silicon Valley in California, a lot of them are headed by ex-executives of Facebook, Google, Apple. And in a lot of these companies, if you're not, as Alex Pang says, if you're not working 70 hours a week, you're considered a slacker. There's a popular company called Basecamp. There's the guys who started that company. They've written a lot of popular books on work, and one's called Rework. They limit email in the evening, and they reduce the length of the working day. And apparently Henry Ford did that as well, back when he was manufacturing the Model T. You can have people working an 8-hour day instead of a 10-hour day, and they could still be very productive. So there's ways to do it. There's ways to do it. I think it's very interesting. Sometimes, and this is the guy who's interviewing the author of the book Rest, and again, his name is Alex Soojung Kim Pang. The guy who interviewed him is British. He's from the UK. And he started asking him about the different working cultures. The working culture in the US is a little bit different from the culture in Europe, because in Europe they tend to have longer holidays, shorter working weeks. Very often they've been accused of not being as productive as they could be because of that. And so he sort of asked him the question, well, maybe Europeans have it right. And this is a little bit deceiving. This is a little bit deceiving because, yeah, they may have it right in some ways, but not in other ways, because Europeans may have more time off, but what are they doing with their time off? And Scott Hahn talked about this in his book, Ordinary Work, Extraordinary Grace. He talked about the fact that, yeah, Europeans might have more time off, but what are they doing with their leisure time? What are they doing, for example, with their Sundays? They're not going to church for the most part. Churches, cathedrals in Europe have been, for the most part, empty for the last several decades. So they're not doing the right thing with their leisure time. So we'll think about that as we go forward, to be sure. And so there's just so many thoughts on that. But I want to talk right now about rest. Like, what are we supposed to be doing with our rest? And even, again, secular writers like Alex Pang, he was asked the question in the interview, we tend to think of rest as supine. You know, just the idea of just laying out and just, you know, doing nothing. But he says rest can be defined in wider terms than that. And here's the counterintuitive discovery. And this goes against what we would think. The most restorative kinds of rest are actually active rests. It's an active rest. And that sounds like an oxymoron. It sounds like a contradiction in terms. But it's really not. And if you think about it just for a minute, it does make sense. If you go for a walk, say you're walking the dog. I'm a dog person. Karen Moran, who's here with me today, she's a dog person, of course. When you go for a walk, do you feel better after having gone for a walk than after watching 2 hours of Netflix?
Usually, yes. Yeah. It almost adds energy. It adds energy to your day.
Exactly. So, and it doesn't have to be walking. I mean, walking is good. Obviously, it gets the body moving, of course, as well. We're not, souls trapped in a body. We're body-soul unities, and we've got to move around, and the body educates the soul in certain ways, no doubt. And that's true, though, I think, of any engaging hobbies. And that's another thing they were talking about in this interview, Karen, this concept of, okay, when you do have some leisure time, what are you going to do? He advocates something called deep play. So we talked about deep.
An extreme sport.
Yeah, it is in some ways because that
push
that,
yourself a little. Yes, whatever your maximum is, go a little more.
Well, it could be something even as you talk about something really intense. It could be, and he gives the example of climbing Mount Everest. Now, most people wouldn't pick that as their leisure activity, but it's very intense. So this term deep play, and I think it's kind of interesting because we've been talking about deep work, deep reading, deep rest. What does that mean? Well, deep rest often involves deep play. And apparently this term deep play was coined by a cultural anthropologist named Clifford Geertz. And he says people who actually are ambitious and they're actually really good at their work, they will often have these hobbies in their rest time that look like they take up enormous amounts of time and energy. And he calls it serious leisure. Okay, this is serious leisure. So it could be something.
I've seen this.
have you seen it?
I have seen this, and it looks fun. I have a neighbor. She's super smart in the tech world. And you know what she does for fun?
What's that?
Puzzles and Legos.
Like intense Legos.
Intense, like the VW van, you know, model or cities, you know, or buildings. Maybe it's like our Lego friend on Twitter. You know,
I was just thinking about that. John Kramer. That could be considered deep play. Like he's making these models of churches, and
she's incredible. A really young person too. And I'm saying, oh, it's good. Then we can be openly putting together puzzles. We don't have to feel like we're, you know, retirement. You know, not that there's anything wrong with retirement and rocking chairs, but I mean, who doesn't love a puzzle? I love a puzzle.
So
I was like,
brain.
Oh my goodness. I was at her house. She had a puzzle out. If you ever want to borrow one, opens her closet. It's stacked full of puzzles. And I was like, are we best friends now?
Is this the Tesla lady?
No, different person.
All right. I just thought
but
I'd
she
ask.
Does, that one likes puzzles too.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Well, interesting. So smart people, something they have in common is they like puzzles.
Or deep play.
Deep play. And this sort of, there's also other benefits to this sort of active rest as well. And it may not be climbing Mount Everest. It could just be walking in the woods with your dog or whatever. But very often this leads to creative reflection too. And Cal Newport talks about this a lot, that he goes out in the woods. The author Cal Newport writes a lot about work and productivity. He goes out in the woods with a notebook. And he calls himself the weird guy in the woods. He'll just kind of sit there and just think through problems as he's walking, and he'll write stuff down, and he'll come up with sometimes complex solutions to complex issues while he's out and about doing his active rest. And it actually helps him sort through problems. So there are a lot of benefits to it, to be sure. I don't know if you get revelations when you're watching Netflix programs. Maybe you do. I mean, I don't know. But I'm not saying it's
like
wrong
it's
to do that, but
sort of depending on what you're watching, maybe. Netflix has some good documentary type things.
They do. Absolutely. It can be educational, for sure.
And really beautiful food programs. So I don't know. But yeah, there's definitely a whole lot of category in there for just tuning out and sitting in front of something else, you know. So that's not probably not deep play. That's probably shallow play.
It probably is shallow play. And another thing that people do that's pretty shallow, too, is sleep.
Yes.
We need deep sleep as well.
Do you nap, Kale?
I usually don't.
Pre-Michaela.
I'm not saying I've never taken a nap, but I usually don't have time to nap. But
it's difficult, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, but sometimes it can be very restorative. Like just even take a quick 10-minute nap just to close your eyes. And
right.
There was some genius from past history. I can't remember who this guy
was. Ross Perot.
Was it Ross Perot?
I remember that was the thing. He was like the power nap, and it was when he was taking that run for the presidency and everything.
A lot of leaders do that. Yeah. But this was like some, I don't know whether it was Thomas Edison, it was some inventor guy. Anyway, so what he would do is he'd sit in his library with a spoon in his hand.
And he would just dropped, he woke up.
Exactly. he would just take these mini naps, and that was enough to refresh him, and then he'd just start working again. So great. Just really quickly, we've got to take a break in a second. We need deep sleep as well. And one of the things that Alex Soo-Jung Kim Pang says is if you don't care about your mental development, if you don't care about your body, then forget about sleep. Mm-hmm. Because sleep is the original rest. If you want to talk about getting more rest in your life, that is the original rest. If you have a nervous system, which last time I checked, we all do, we need to sleep. And even if we don't, we still need to sleep because plants, they don't have a nervous system, but they still need some, they sort of go to sleep, which is kind of weird. But we need it for brain maintenance because the brain, believe it or not, can only clear out certain plaques and toxins in your brain. You got to brush the plaque off your teeth. You got to brush it off your brain too. The only way you can get it out is by sleeping. It builds up when you're awake, and you can get rid of these toxins and plaques in your brain when you sleep. And so that also helps us, by the way, subliminally to get answers to some problems that we're working on. Yeah. And that's a really, really surprising fact. So anyways, lots to think about there. So when we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about some Catholic solutions to leisure and some ways that we can look at this from a theological perspective. Yeah, so let me know. Are you working too hard? You want to take a break? Glad you're taking a break with me now on the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149. I've been spending time with you way less. I lost my patience in the wait list. But now I'm in your hands, I feel weightless. So bring me back into your presence and take away my distractions. Cause they can take my all away.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the show. On this Wednesday, we're talking about rest, God's gift of rest. We can't work all the time. We need to work. We need to work hard, but we also need to pull back and get some rest. And paradoxically, if we rest well, active rest, we're going to actually work better and give God more glory. That sounds like a good deal to me. And speaking about hard workers, nobody ever said that Michael Jeffrey Jordan wasn't a hard worker on the basketball court. And big anniversary today. Today, and I know a lot of people in Chicago listening, on this day in 1996, the Chicago Bulls set the record at the time, which is no longer a record. It was broken. I'll get into that later. But the Bulls won their 72nd game of the 95-96 season. They went 72-10. That was a record at the time. A lot of people think they are the greatest basketball team of all time. And you will all remember their very stirring intro music at the Chicago Stadium, the Madhouse on Madison. Check this out.
Scotty Pippen! A 6-11
Well, does that make you want to run through a brick wall? That is awesome. If that's not the greatest intro ever in sports, I don't know what is. That was incredible. And that was from their, you might have caught it, said the five-time champions. Of course, they won six. That was from their last championship season, from the 98 finals against the Jazz. So, wow, when he says, from North Carolina, I mean, wow, that's awesome. Obviously, introducing Jordan, saving the best for last, the GOAT. So I'm going to bring Patrick Alog up here. Patrick, obviously, is a huge Hoops fan as well. Do you think that Bulls team was the greatest of all time?
No, I think the 2019 Toronto Raptors are. No. No, seriously. Actually, I do. I believe they do. They are 72-10, and they won the championship, unlike the 2016 Golden State Warriors, who went 73-9 but did not win the championship. So, yes, yeah. I believe they are the greatest team of all time.
And obviously a little point of continuity there was that Steve Kerr, this could be a Jeopardy question, mm-hmm. Steve Kerr, who of course played on that team with Michael Jordan on the 72-10 mm-hmm. team, he was the coach of the 2015-2016 Golden State Warriors, which broke the Bulls' record by one game. They went 73-9 in that season, but they didn't win the championship, of
Correct.
Course. They lost in a seven-game thriller to LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Remember that amazing block that he had in the last minute of the game against
Unfortunately, Iguodala? Yes, I was going for Golden State that
yeah,
day.
Yeah, he would, because you're a California guy. And I remember, Cleveland, this one's for you. Remember LeBron? That was an awesome final, I got to tell you. I don't think that Bulls team, as much as I love them, I think they're an amazing team. And by the way, pray for Scottie Pippen, because he announced on Twitter, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that unfortunately his son passed away. And I don't know many of the details about this, but that's a great tragedy. Nobody ever wants to have to bury their kid. And so a lot of people reaching out to Pip and praying for him. So I hope everyone listening will do the same. I happen to think that the greatest team in history is the 1986 Boston Celtics.
Well, I can understand that. They're talked about as one of the greatest teams of all time. I think they went 40-1 at home as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but and, no, I can understand though why you said that.
And a lot of people don't remember this because Michael Jordan had one of his most famous performances in the playoffs against the 86 Celtics. Remember, he scored 63 in Boston Garden.
Still the record for most points in a playoff game.
Yep. And Larry Bird said that wasn't Michael Jordan, that was God in basketball shoes. A little blasphemous, of course, but you get the sentiment that he's trying to say. A lot of people don't remember. The Bulls lost that game. They lost every game in that series. They got swept by the Celtics because Celtics were awesome. Michael Jordan is great, but he didn't have the supporting cast at that time. And anyways, so but that intro, by the way, when I got married, I wanted to use that music for introducing the wedding party. And we couldn't find it. My DJ couldn't find it. I didn't know what the name of the song was, but apparently it's from the Alan Parsons Project.
Yeah, it's called Sirius. That's the name of the song.
It's called Sirius. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that at the time. And so we couldn't find this thing anywhere, so we had to use Van Halen's Jump, which I don't know if it worked as well.
Hey, that's still pretty active, though. It's still pretty lively.
And now, the groom. Yeah, so anyway, so that's what we did, and I guess the DJ was thinking basketball jump, I don't know, but it didn't really work. It wasn't nearly as inspiring as the Bulls intro, but I tried, and I failed, as sometimes I do, but we get up and pick ourselves up, and we move on. And listen, let's move on with the show now. We are talking about rest, we are talking about the importance of it, and let me go to the phones right now. Carol is on the line from Austin, Texas, and Carol, I want to hear what you have to say about this.
At the top of the show, you were citing an author, and his experience kind of resonated with me because I've definitely found that you have to take breaks even during mm-hmm. a busy work day to kind of maintain balance. But also, like the author, I realized that because I went through a long period where I did a lot of extensive fasting as well as quite regular retreats. And I find those periods when I completely unplugged from the world were really healing and really helped me to, you know, unplug from the world, but kind of plug into spirit, connect with God. And then, as anybody who's been on retreat probably knows, though, by Monday morning at 11 o'clock on the first day back at work, you could feel like you didn't go on retreat. And that's the moment you got to take another break. So I would take lots of little breaks during the day. Sometimes just 10 minutes, just go outside. I was lucky at one point to work right next to a river and just watch the light play off the water. And then just to kind of, to just clear the brain. Cause I think it's just an overload of the world's busyness, the chaos, you know, the messaging, the radio, the TV, the so I, that's kind of what I felt like he experienced as well in his experience.
Yeah, that's those are wise words, and obviously relevant radio you want to keep on all the time, 24/7, right? So that's the one exception. I'm kidding, of course. I'm kidding, but no, I like what you mentioned about just even sitting by the water. I think contemplating nature is a way that a lot of people can connect with God, and water is something that obviously it's a huge biblical theme, and just we have to reflect peace, the peace of God, just like a calm pond, you know, reflects the clouds above it, and we can't really reflect God's peace to the world if we're all riled up inside. So we do need to take those breaks for prayer, for just even just to take a walk for a few minutes. I think that's good. I think that's part of being balanced, even while you're trying to work. So Carol, thanks for that very much. Really appreciate that. That's a great call.
Thank you. Love your show.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind. Carol calling from Austin, and call again real soon. And I like what she said also about the importance of retreats. I think everybody should, if possible, go on an annual retreat. I think it's really, really important to take that step back and just connect with God and reset your life in many ways. And yeah, and just to take that extended, intense time with our Lord. I think that's really important, to be sure. And let me just talk a little bit about we were talking about, and this author, obviously, we were mentioning earlier, who wrote this book. I want to read this book called Rest. And the author is Alex Soojung Kim Pang. Well, he talked a lot in his interview about this concept of leisure. And really, in Catholic teaching, it's a big concept. And a guy that we mentioned, and here's another name I mispronounced, Karen, Joseph Pieper. I called him Joseph Piper at the time, but I was wrong. It's Joseph Pieper. He's a philosopher. He wrote this book called Leisure, the Basis of Culture. And it's a really important concept. And Aristotle, even the great philosopher Aristotle, he said that the first principle of action is leisure, which sounds counterintuitive. The first principle of doing anything is leisure. And actually, Aristotle thought that the purpose of all work is really leisure. The purpose of all lack of leisure is to get leisure. So work is not an end in itself to Aristotle, to the philosopher, and it's not for us as Catholics either. Because work, although it's really, really important, it's not the end game. It's not the end game. And St. Jose Maria Escrivá, he used an example of if your shovel weighed 100 pounds, that wouldn't really help you very much. I mean, and that's what happens when people make work the end of things. It's a means to an end, right? We need to work. We need to provide for our families. We need to glorify God. God gives us work as a gift. But we're really looking for something more. We're really looking for rest, and God's rest in particular. And just as God rested after creating the world, not that he got tired, but he's part of the reason why he did that is he's setting an example for us because we're created in his image, but we do get tired. We do get tired, and we have to rest. And in fact, the Compendium of the Social Doctrine of the Church, which is a really important book, it's something that I need to read a lot more of, the Social Doctrine of the Church. In the Social Doctrine of the Church, there's this passage, and it says that men and women have to structure their lives to make sure that they, quote, enjoy sufficient rest and free time that will allow them to tend to their family, their cultural, their social, and their religious life, end of quote. And this is a serious obligation because other people are depending on this. It's not just for yourself. It's for your family. It's for your society. It's for the culture, as well as obviously for our religious obligations. So this is an important concept to be sure. And I read an article about this by a Catholic lawyer named Andrew Greenwell Esquire. Anybody who says Esquire after their name is cool in my books. I just think it sounds cool. So Andrew Greenwell wrote this article on Catholic.org a few years ago about how Catholic social teaching leads to the recovery of leisure and a rejection of the concept of total work, which is kind of what most people are into these days. And this idea that we've got to keep holy, first of all, the Lord's Day, Sunday. We've got to keep that as a sacred day. And public authorities should really try to help this happen as well, although that's pretty rare these days because most people think in secular societies, why should there be one special day? Why should businesses be shut down on one particular day? Not everybody's a Catholic. Of course, that's true in societies that feature people from different backgrounds and beliefs, no question about it. But a lot of people read the statement of Aristotle when he says, leisure is the point here. The first principle of action is leisure. They don't really quite get that. And Joseph Pieper, this is where Joseph Pieper comes in. He translates Aristotle's words as follows. He says, "We are not at leisure in order to be at leisure." We are not at leisure. So everything that we do that's not leisure, that's work, all the other stuff, that actually has as its end game leisure. And most people think of leisure in a totally backwards way. They think that leisure is a negative thing. It's non-work. It's what you do when you're not working. And in fact, the purpose of whatever leisure you have is just so that you can, quote unquote, recharge your batteries and get back to work. Mm-hmm. So whether it's
the
that long... Exactly. So whether it's that long vacation, you're laying on the beach or you're just chilling out on the couch, maybe watching old Bulls highlights from 1996, whatever it is that you do, the purpose of that is just so that you can get yourself in a state where you can then again work. Mm-hmm. And
empty it's like you're empty, so you rest.
But yeah.
But like you said, when you just do some kind of deep play, it fills you up as opposed to just vegging out.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to give you another running example, Cale.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
So when if you're training and you're learning to run longer or stronger or faster, rest or recovery is part of the training.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just keep, I want to run 2 miles. Mm-hmm. No, you have to, you don't just go out and run that.
I
guess you could, but you would be definitely depleted at the end. But you train, and part of training is resting so you can recover.
Yeah.
So leisure to rest and provide recovery is a companion to work. So,
I like that. I like that analogy because it's about the wholeness of the person, the total life that you're trying to build here.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. And in fact, in Greek, this is something I learned. In Greek, the word for leisure is skol, from which we get the word school.
Hmm.
And the word for business, believe it or not, is ascolia, which is the negative, like an atheist is someone who does not believe in God. So an ascolia is the negative of skol. So it's the negative of leisure. So that's kind of interesting that the word for business is the negative of leisure. And in fact, this lawyer gives another example, Andrew Greenwell, Esquire. He says that the word for rest or peace, otium, is the main word, otium. Now, the negative of otium is negotium.
Hmm.
Kind of like negative, right? Negotium. And that's from where we get the word negotiate. So that means business. That's kind of interesting. Hmm. So it almost means like business is anti-peace in a certain sense. And
might be onto something there.
Yeah, we might be onto something there. But listen, we got to take a quick break here, but we'll be back with more and more of your phone calls as well. 1-888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, so glad you're with us on the show. Lucas is playing some pumping music, man. I kind of want to get up and move around. This is the act of rest we were talking about. We're talking about rest. We're talking about the biblical view of it. We're talking about the Catholic view of leisure. Let's go to the phones right now. Sal is on the line from Santa Cruz, California. And Sal, I know your phone is dying, so I wanted to get you on as quickly as possible. How you doing? What's on your mind?
I'm doing okay. I was going to add that playing music. I play the guitar. That's a wonderful form of leisure for me.
Nice. I like that. And you find that relaxing and just...
Yeah, it also gives me practice. I don't know how you feel about folk masses. Some people hate them, but I've played quite a few.
Okay. Yeah, the folk masses, there's wow, we could have a whole debate on that one, I think. But there's people love them, some people hate them. And obviously you played in them. And obviously music helps us to worship the Lord, right? So the genre of music, yeah, we can argue about that. What makes a song obviously holy, I guess, in some ways is the word. I guess you could say it's more than just the words. We can get into this. That could be a huge rabbit hole, I'll tell you that. You know, are there forms of music that are intrinsically more holy than others, like Gregorian chant? I don't know. I love Gregorian chant. We talked about that yesterday, but that's really cool, Sal. And I encourage you to continue on with that. And that's another good leisure opportunity, to be sure. Thanks for calling in. That was Sal calling from Santa Cruz, California. And this is really, in a sense, the true meaning of rest. St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, he said this: "I've always seen rest as time set aside from daily tasks, never as days of idleness. Rest means recuperation, to gain strength, to form ideals and make plans. In other words, it means a change of occupation so that you can come back later with a new impetus to your daily job." End of quote. So I think in some ways, this idea of deep play, he was kind of ahead of the game on that. This idea that you're not doing nothing. Rest doesn't mean complete idleness. It doesn't mean just flaking out. It means doing something else, changing your occupation to something else. So for Sal, it's playing guitar. And actually, my wife, Trish, texted me during the show, and she said, and this actually has great benefits to me, too. She says her deep play is baking. She loves to bake, and she's great at it. So... And this is why my deep play needs to...
We want in on some of that, Kale. Come on now.
I know. I got to send you guys some muffins or something. But speaking of muffins, I feel like I've got a muffin top, you know, just hanging
That's
over.
Okay.
I need to make my deep play running to work off my wife's deep play of baking. But anyways, that's another story.
It'll all work out.
I'm looking forward to that resurrection body at some point.
Right.
All right, let's go to the phones again. And Lori is on the line from beautiful San Diego, California. Lori, what are you thinking about today when it comes to this?
I'm thinking about resting, and your show interrupts my rest.
What do you do for your rest, Lori?
My idea of rest is to be flat or just a little bit up and out.
Okay.
Nothing going on. Mm-hmm. The brain is at zero or whatever it does. No more than 20 minutes, though. That's it. Only 20 minutes.
Okay, so you just take a nap, but you limit it to 20 minutes. You don't take two-hour naps or, you know.
Now, but I did that all during my work life. I would go into my car, eat my lunch, put the seat back, and I'd be out for 20 minutes, and I could go back and have a very productive day. Otherwise, I wouldn't. I wouldn't be able to talk to anybody. So
yeah.
It worked for me.
You know, there's a lot of science behind that, Lori. People do talk about this. A lot of people swear by this. Even business leaders will take, I've heard of famous CEOs that swear by this nap. They'll take just a 10 or 15 minute nap during the day, and it really works for them, and their brain feels refreshed. And did you ever drink coffee before your nap?
No, I don't drink coffee.
You don't drink coffee. Okay, because one thing that I've heard also, and this is good for driving as well, if you're tired while you're driving, driving while tired is just as dangerous as driving while under the influence of something in so many ways. And so what they say to do is grab yourself a coffee, drink a coffee, pull over on the side of the road or whatever, and take a 20-minute nap. Because by the time you've taken that 20-minute nap, the caffeine has worked its way through your system. And then it'll give you that jolt, and it's just enough to refresh you to keep you going for a while longer. So, I on the occasions when I do take a nap, I do usually have a coffee beforehand because it does work. I'm telling you, it works. So
wow, I would think that would be the opposite.
But anyway,
that's great.
Yeah, I think a lot of European countries, you know, that's why they have nap time. They know it's important.
Yeah. Oh, it's so ingrained in the culture in some ways, like places like Spain, you know, the siesta, it's a big thing. And sometimes it can be something that it can be too much if abused, if you're taking hours and hours to, you know, but you know, there is some wisdom in it for sure. And, I thank you for that call, Lori. That's a great intel. And hey, you always make me think of anybody calls from San Diego. I immediately imagine myself on Mission Beach, just, you know, speaking of resting. Love that place. Love that
resting.
City. And thanks for listening, Lori. Really appreciate you. Thanks for the call. Yeah. So, Karen, you think that wouldn't work?
I would think it seems like it doesn't work, but I guess that makes sense. It takes about 20 minutes and then it kicks in.
Yeah.
So why try and struggle driving when you're waiting for the caffeine to kick in?
Don't do that. Yeah.
Pull over.
Don't do that.
You know, there's that old adage that no one ever writes on their tombstone. He really worked so mm-hmm. hard. Or, you mm-hmm. know, never. You don't regret.
This idea. I wish I spent more time at the office.
Right. So.
Yeah, it's very true.
It's important to remind. It's important reminders, Kale.
Yeah, it is, and it's something that it's a serious topic that we need to think about. We need to sanctify mm-hmm. our rest as well as our work,
right.
obviously. So, Anita is on the line from Las Vegas. Anita, welcome to the show. What are your thoughts on this?
Why, thank you. I want to talk to you guys about the meaning of the word, meaning of the words, recreation, vacation.
Oh, nice.
T-I-O-N is a common suffix that you hear all the time.
Mm-hmm.
T-I-O-N, vacation, recreation.
Yeah.
It means in the act of, or the act of. So when you're on vacation, you're in the act of vacating your normal routine. If you're on recreation, you are in the act of recreating. That fits in exactly with what you're talking about.
It really does. It really does. Yeah, that's a great
awesome.
Tip. Yeah, language can help, right? Yep. If we know where these words come from and what they mean, and if we get a hold of this, we can actually do these things. That is for sure. So thanks, Anita. I appreciate that. That's a really, really good...
A hint I tell all the my catechists. If you never forget T-I-O-N, you'll always get the words right, the meaning right.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Wow, that's great. So, hey, we've got to break this down. We've got to get some grammar here, and we've got to understand the definitions of these words, and got to get it down. And this is... again, this concept, we talked about some language earlier, these Greek terms of skol, this idea of really total work that the culture is so obsessed with, this idea of total work, it actually came about through a misunderstanding, really, of Catholic doctrine. Remember the story of Martha and Mary? Of course you do, in the Gospel of Luke chapter 10. This idea of Martha being an image of the active life or the vita activa, and then Mary being a symbol sitting at Jesus' feet and learning of the vita contemplativa, the contemplative life, the church tended to give precedence historically to the contemplative life over the active life. Not necessarily that it was trying to denigrate the active life. I mean, we do need both. But really, I think what we have to do as lay people, we have to combine Martha and Mary in one person. That's you and me. That we have to be contemplatives in the middle of the world. That's how St. Jose Maria said it. And I think that's really important because, you know, some of us are called, of course, to the total contemplative life, to become a nun, to become a religious brother, to pray for the world by leaving the world. But a lot of us have to find God in the middle of everyday activity in life. And so this is important. And our rest is one place where we learn how to find God. And when we step back, we get into that prayer, we can then be more aware of God's presence in the street. If we're taking that time for prayer, if we're living that Sabbath rest well, connecting with God, we can not lose the sight of his presence when we're out there doing our work and all the things that take up our day, for sure. It's a great change in perspective. Yeah, so, all right.
I agree. I agree, Kale.
Okay, well,
people on Twitter are agreeing too.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, are we seeing some tweets?
Yes,
Lucas?
If you tuned in late, we're going to have that podcast up shortly, and definitely check it out and share it with some friends.
Yeah,
golly, who couldn't use a reminder that in this busy, busy world where a lot of people are at home working nonstop, you gotta stop.
Yep, absolutely, and that's part of. Part of, you know, when we give ourselves to God and we try to live these minutes during the day, am I doing what I should be doing at this time? Well, sometimes it's time to work, and when it's time to stop work, it's time to stop so that you can be there for your family, your friends, even for yourself. and take that time that you need to rest. Sometimes that's sleep, too. Make sure you're sleeping well, exercising, getting out there, enjoying the world that God created. It's all part of the wider picture of being a well-rounded person. So,
have you heard Father Rocky's four H's
for
Let's vocation? Hear it. Holy, humble, happy, and healthy. So healthy.
I like that.
Rest.
I like that. The four H's. We'll try to keep that in mind until we meet again tomorrow. Edmund, I see you there. Sorry we didn't get your call. Glad you're reading that book, The Idiot by Dostoevsky. We talked about books yesterday. I need to read that one, too. I've been accused of being that from time to time. Lucas Holt produced. Karen Moran chatted with me on the show a lot, of course. Producer here at Relevant Radio and Patrick Alog screened the calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.